Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A new film creates a fictionalized portrait of the enigmatic horror writer Shirley Jackson, one that's nearly as chilling as Jackson's own writing. The movie is called Shirley, and it begins when a young married couple, Rose and Fred, relocate to Vermont in the early 1950s. Fred is a wet-behind-the-ears academic and is excited to be working at Bennington College under Professor Stanley Hyman, the husband of Shirley Jackson. Jackson's acclaim has recently skyrocketed after the publication of her short story, The Lottery. Rose is a huge fan. Rose and Fred move in with Shirley and Stanley while they search for a house of their own. Rose has academic ambitions of her own, but is tasked with caring for Shirley, who suffers from agoraphobia and episodes of depression. And though at first Shirley seems to feel nothing but contempt for her new companion, over time, emotional and sexual intimacy grows between the two women, intimacy that threatens to boil over into dangerous territory. Let's take a listen to a little bit of the trailer.
You want to see what a writer does? Come here. This book. It hurts more than the others. Can't figure out this girl. This book might kill me.
How could you even say that?
I'm a witch. Didn't anyone tell you?
I hear she never leaves the house. She's gone sick in the head.
Do you know what it's like to have a secret?
You're unusually cheerful.
You, Rosie.
I just don't want her putting strange ideas in that head of yours.
She's my friend.
Women like Shirley don't have friends.
I feel a bit like we're on the verge of madness.
What will happen?
This will be
most reviled story ever printed.
My horrifically talented bride.
Never has a typewriter sounded so menacing. Shirley stars Elizabeth Moth as Shirley Jackson and was directed by Josephine Decker. You can stream the film now on Hulu, and Josephine Decker joins us. Welcome to All of It, Josephine.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm beyond honored to be here. Thank you, Allison.
So what was fascinating to you about Shirley Jackson, the person, and then Shirley Jackson, the writer, that you knew you wanted to capture?
Well, oh my gosh, her real personal life is, you know, it's funny, our film obviously is based on a fictional work. It's based on a novel by Susan Scarf Merrill called Shirley, which is about this young couple visiting Shirley and her husband. But the real Shirley is such an inspiration. I mean, she's just light years ahead. She was the breadwinner of her family, you know, making her money off of her writing. She's especially actually well known for the like comedic stories that she was writing about her children and how, like, what a terrible kind of like, in quotes, terrible mother she was, like, which I think gave permission for a lot of women in that era to just like laugh at themselves. And it's sort of the mountain that they had to accomplish, raising kids kind of isolated and on their own in these households. But and she and her husband were in you know, it's funny to call it non-monogamous. Her husband would basically had these outside of the relationship affairs and was like, would write these elaborate notes to her about exact everything that happened. So it was like, I think a fairly, you know, in the biography, there's a great Ruth Franklin biography about Shirley that talks about how, you know, Shirley had a very emotionally abusive mother, and she maybe was like reiterating that with her partner and how challenging that was for her, you know. And then at the same time, she's just a witty, fun, like incredibly brilliant human who wrote, obviously, you know, some of the literature that has been beyond timeless. You know, I think The Lottery especially speaks to now. She was writing about The Lottery, which many of us read in middle school or high school, is about a town that annually stones to death one of its members just because that's what they've always done, you know. And it's really, yeah, sort of the kind of institutionalized violence that we're all talking about today, I think she was talking about in a different way in her own time. So she's just like light years ahead of the era that she was writing in. And then as a writer, her work actually descends into, I think one of the things that draws me to it is I come from a kind of a poetic family, and so I love work that moves from sort of a structured reality into a more of a poetic logic or a dream space. And Shirley's writing at times can be very structured, but often descends into a sort of a dream space, so that you go from a world that you think you understand the rules and the laws, and then all of a sudden you're in a much more liquid experience that is happening in someone's mind. So I really adore her work, and that is a big reason that I wanted to work on the project, and also hopefully bring her work to audiences who maybe didn't realize she had such a large body of work that has been so influential on many writers of today.
It's interesting that you described it like a dream space and a liquid environment, because the look of this movie, down to the color palette, is sort of goes back and forth between being dreamy and nightmarish. And a little bit scary. What kind of conversations did you have with your art director and with your DP about how you wanted the film to look?
Well, it was we really wanted the film to feel like a Shirley Jackson story. So that was intentional on many levels, from the writing to the look. And, we had a great production designer, Sue Chan. A lot of the film takes place inside of Shirley's house, which is the way Shirley Jackson in her stories writes houses. There's sort of these labyrinths that lead you into some weird corner of the mind. And so it was important that this house had like strong atmosphere, but also we didn't want the house to be like a stereotype of a scary house. And I think we found the perfect place. And then Sue just outfitted it with, you know, mountains of the kinds of stuff that Shirley would be into, like, you know, looms and millions of books. And I think in reality, Shirley and Stanley had 20,000 books by the 60s, and in their home, you couldn't walk through certain like hallways of their home because there were so many books on either side. You had to like kind of like go sideways. But and then Sterla, our cinematographer, is just he's a stunning like really visionary cinematographer who has a real intuitive feel to his work, and so we had kind of a different sets of rules that we were using for different ways of shooting sections of the film. One of the ones that really stands out to me is called Creature, which we only used in very specific scenes, which was meant that the camera was like a creature that lived, that like lived close to the body. So when he would shoot that way, he had to like keep the camera very close to a face, and then it could only, if it moved to the other person in the room, it had to move along a surface, as if you were a baby or a cat. You had to kind of crawl over to the other person. So we were trying to really be creative with how we brought the words to life, and the page and the story to life, and make it feel like you had really entered another way of seeing and thinking, just like how Shirley allows you to do that in her writing.
My guest is Josephine Decker, the director of the new film, Shirley, which you can see on Hulu. Now, you mentioned this isn't a strict biopic. Shirley Jackson had children. This Shirley Jackson in your film does not. How did you decide what to keep about her life, what facts to keep, and what that you were going to discard? Well, not discard, just not use.
A lot of that, I think, was happened before I came on the project. The writer, Sarah Gubbins, is a genius. She actually worked on the show I Love Dick. She adapted that book for Amazon's series, worked with Jill Soloway to do that. And so there were no kids. I got the script, when it was already a draft. And she had, I think, there were a number of reasons that I think she wanted to veer away from the real Shirley Jackson. I mean, and part of it is just, we were adapting a novel. We don't have Shirley's life rights. We were not adapting her biography. So we had to be very clear that this was a fictionalized Shirley. And because, she does have living children, and I think there's a territory there that you don't want to necessarily get into of trying to depict in fiction somebody who's actually real and alive. But at the same time, I think, we because I think the intention of the project all along was to make a film about, you know, Shirley's, the ghost of Shirley Jackson in a way, or like her, the inspiration of that we felt from Shirley, is putting this writer into almost one of her stories. So we were kind of clear that we were trying actually to almost make many signs to any watchers that this is not Shirley's real life. The timeline really doesn't work out based on the timeline of like when she wrote The Lottery, when her kids, you know, in our minds, actually, it wasn't that we eliminated the children, but maybe that they were like old enough that they could have gone to college. But we were sort of messing with time a lot. And I think, but the most important aspect of the story to Sarah was that we wanted to keep the story in this moment right after Shirley had written The Lottery. In fact, The Lottery it got more like fan mail and hate mail than The New Yorker had ever gotten for any other work of fiction. And so, that did happen in real life. And then she really did kind of go to this era of closing herself into her home. And so that was really what we wanted to bring out in the film and talk about this kind of moment when maybe some of the sort of mental health issues that she was dealing with and the depression and agoraphobia that was cloistering her off, we were trying to really focus in on those aspects and how the act of creation itself can really exacerbate any other thing you have going on. Those were some of the things that we were pondering. Oh, and I should add, actually, you know, you mentioned it's on Hulu. It is also available on transactional platforms like iTunes and Amazon. Great. And I know that just want to make sure that word gets out about that.
Of course. Now, the film follows the fictional Shirley Jackson as she's writing a novel about the disappearance of a student from a liberal arts college. And that is partially based on a real disappearance of a student at Bennington named Paula Jean Weldon. In the film, what about the disappearance strikes a chord with Shirley?
I think, you know, it's interesting. Shirley, you know, in the film, what I think she is drawing her to this young woman, this woman who goes missing is, you know, there's a clear story and there's a kind of like, who was she? And it happened right in this town. But I think over the course of the film, you really see that this is a deeper conversation that Shirley is having maybe with herself about, mm-hmm. The young woman that she was or that she wasn't. She actually dropped out of school and I think didn't really necessarily feel kindred spirit with a lot of the young women who were at her school. Hangs a Man is a lot about being an outsider in a university. And so I think that while this starts out as like a conversation around, you know, who is this other that I don't know, it becomes much more a conversation around who am I and what is my own history. And I think Shirley's exploring that through this kind of muse of Rose, this young tenant who's living with her. So she's in the process of investigating Paula. She brings Rose into that investigation and ends up sort of really more investigating Rose and herself and the sort of darker desires and unlived passions and intellectual pursuits that both of them have had.
My guest is Josephine Decker, the director of Shirley, which is now streaming on many platforms. We'll continue our conversation with Josephine after the break. We'll talk a little bit about creating Shirley with actress Elizabeth Moss. Stay with us. This is All of It. My guest is Josephine Decker, the director of the new film Shirley, about the life of Shirley Jackson. So it's interesting because the Shirley in this film is not necessarily easy to be around. She's sort of got edges and she's enigmatic, but she can really sort of keep people engaged and wrapped with her stories and her conversations. Let's listen to a moment in the film. This is a clip of Shirley and her husband Stanley entertaining their guests.
Next thing I know, he's ripping apart a story of mine. Then he has the gall to tell me that he has lost his wallet.
Oh,
that wallet's been lost for over 20 years.
Now, mind you, that story was the most remarkable story I'd ever read. I knew I was going to marry the woman who wrote it. I was going to hunt her down and make her marry me. To our suffering, my dear.
There's not enough scotch in the world for that one.
So Shirley, what are you writing now?
A little novella. I'm calling none of your goddamn business.
That was from Shirley. My guest is director Josephine Decker. So Shirley is just such an interesting character. When you were talking to Elizabeth Moss and working with her, how did you want to get to the balance of her being sort of this tough, strong woman, but there's also a great deal of sadness in her?
That was actually one of the most special parts of working on this project with Lizzie. She goes by Lizzie for those people. It's funny. I was like, am I allowed to call Elizabeth Moss Lizzie? You know, but that's, I guess, that, yeah, a lot of people call her that. But she's such a formidable and strong actor. You know, we've watched her inhabit so many roles and be so many humans. And I think she was really excited by Shirley because it's so different from anything she's ever done. Shirley is such a character in a lot of ways. And she's got all these, kind of cutting remarks inside of her, and just some of the best. Sarah, our writer, just wrote some of the most incredible dialogue for her, and you could tell on the page she jumps off the page and out of the script. And so I think Lizzie was really excited to kind of inhabit this human and be informed also by the real human. And something that we really had discovered together, I would say, is just how vulnerable Shirley is, and how there's scenes where we had this kind of choices between going bigger with Shirley and going much more like allowing Shirley to go inside of herself. And I think it was a big breakthrough when we realized that when Shirley goes into herself and when she finds her insight in something very, the bad word for it is small, but when you find something that's kind of like more contained and more restrained, that Lizzie, one of the things that really blows you away about her as an actor is how much happens with she doesn't have to move much to do so much. And in fact, early on in our rehearsal process, she was like, I don't think Shirley moves very much. And that really became, in a way, something that felt like a centerpiece of the film, that Shirley is this kind of like the rock in the center of that house around which everyone else, everyone else is orbiting really around her. But she does have that kind of insight, and that there's like a universe of magic really in that Lizzie can access in these performances that are incredibly subtle. And that I feel like that's the huge gift that she gave us. And Shirley is this like really like subtle explosions inside of her performance.
The relationship between Shirley and this young woman, Rose, is so interesting, and it evolves, and it's sort of elastic. It's really interesting to watch it change and morph. And part of the change is a sexual attraction that comes about. And I'm curious about, in terms of the direction, we have to remember the time we were in. And I was interested in the way it was written and the way it was directed, how you wanted to let us know that there was sexual tension between these two people.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's funny. I remember at one point, maybe like when we were three quarters of the way through our editing time, we watched the film down, and I realized, wow, it's so exciting and unexpected that an erotic energy emerges between them. And it's not really where you think that it's going, but I think that's actually something that Sarah really brought to the script that wasn't necessarily something in the novel. And I think Sarah was just like, there is the romance of a muse and a kind of mentor or artist can become that. And so I think she made a more overt choice to allow a bit of a sexuality to seep into the film. And I think to me, it's really one of the exciting parts of I've got a lot to say in my own film, but I feel like it was a really exciting part watching that writing come alive in the story that we were telling, because, I think there's a thing. This is funny because I'm realizing that this is kind of complimenting our own movie, but I think there's a thing where a lot of movies, you sort of know, at a certain point in the movie, you sort of know where it's going. You have this sense that, like, okay, I get where this relationship is going to go. And I think with Shirley and Roses, you just kind of keep having the sense, like, I don't know where this is going to go next. And that's really, you know, kudos to Sarah. And it was exciting to bring this, like, sensual, erotic energy to life between them, because it did feel like there is a reason that Rose stays with Shirley. There's a great scene in the movie where the two women are talking over a mushroom, and Shirley sort of offers this deadly mushroom to Rose, and sort of the liberation of death, basically. But it's such an erotic scene. And I remember when I was pitching for the film, I was like, this is a sex scene. This mushroom scene is a sex scene. You know, we have to shoot it like it's a sex scene. And I think that really is the spark that turns this next section into an erotic kind of thing between them, because it's sort of like, I think when you come to the precipice, the edge of your understanding of yourself, there's something that changes both in your mind and your body. And it makes sense that you would kind of suddenly, the person who opened your eyes to that, you might change the entire way you see them as well.
What's your responsibility as a director when you're shooting a sex scene, be it over foraging for mushrooms or in a bathtub?
You know, I've really learned a lot from kind of different guides in terms of how to prepare actors for sex scenes. And I think it's really important to take the time to do it right, and obviously to spend time on it before you get to set. I never want to, you know, throw anyone into a sex scene without just say, like, oh, cameras are rolling. You know, you really want to talk about boundaries and take the time in a more very neutral setting to like have a conversation around what does the script ask for, what are each of the actors comfortable with, and then how you know, do a bunch of exercises that allow these actors who maybe have never spent much time together to sort of become comfortable with each other's bodies and, you know, lying in each other's laps, you know, cuddling, stroking each other's hair. And I think one of the things that was really wonderful about Shirley is that the actors, it was a pretty intimate set in a way. It wasn't a huge, you know, we weren't a huge group. And Sterla is such a sensitive DP that when we shot the sex scenes, for instance, between Rose and Fred, there was a very tender energy to the camera work, I felt, and a very safe space between Logan Lerman and Odessa Young play those two actors, and they really just did a beautiful job of kind of like creating a safe space for each other. And they were friends, and so that made it much easier. But yeah, and then actually I remember that there's a scene where Shirley and Rose kind of play footsie under the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And dinner table scenes are sort of hilariously complicated to get right because you have all these props, like the food runs out at different times in each take. Like somebody has like half the mashed potatoes on their plate in one take and like three quarters of their wine glass, and then it's like half, you know, there's so many logistical things to keep track of. And I remember we were starting to rehearse this footsie scene, which had some dialogue. Everyone was like, okay, well, where are the potatoes? And like, okay, should we, you know, when is Stanley going to serve the wine? And I just, like, this is not the most professional thing that's ever happened to me, but I just started crying because I was so sad that we were going to lose the energy of the scene in all of the kind of like technical issues.
In pursuit of continuity.
Like, okay, yes, in pursuit of continuity. And so, the actors actually were so wonderful, and they were like, what's going on, Josephine? And I was like, this is like, I think that one of the things that I bring to my work is, I was like, I got hired on this movie because I'm good at sex scenes. And I feel like this is a sex scene. It's not about the potatoes, you know, like, so we decided actually together to do the first take of that scene silently, and to not do it with any dialogue and not worry about the plates and not worry about the table, and to really just feel into the scene. And actually a lot of what we ended up using for that scene came from that first silent take. So I feel really grateful that, that my bizarrely expressed instinct was taken so to heart by our actors. And I think that really speaks to how a lot of the filming went. It was really a team a team atmosphere and everyone trying to support each other while being vulnerable and attempting to bring out the most essential aspects of the story.
Crying's fine. Sometimes it's appropriate. Don't let anybody tell you that's not. My guest is Josephine Decker. The name of the film is Shirley. I have one more question before I let you go. You know, and I don't want to give too much away, but as the movie continues, the lines between real and hallucinations and imaginings, it becomes blurrier and dreamier. What do you like about exploring that space between reality and imagination?
Oh, wow. I mean, thank you for asking that. That's really one of my favorite things about working in cinema. You know, in our real lives, we move between our minds and our bodies and our realities all the time. And, you know, you can easily just go to a whole nother reality, spend 10 minutes there, and then realize you're just sitting there and, you know, dropped your fork. What I love about cinema is that you really can bring that to life. You can kind of go to that other reality. And there are so many like ways to get there that are, some of which are very, you know, utilized in our culture a lot. You know, like I'm sitting with my fork and then like, and then I go, you know, cut to other place. But I think the more slippery and sometimes for me exciting place is that like, it's maybe a little more Tarkovsky, you know, like you drop the fork and then you realize that the pea is rolled across the floor and hit the foot of someone who is standing in the kitchen, but where, you know, are they in your mind or are they in your reality? And so I think that kind of the slipperiness of our reality and the ways that we slide from kind of one space into another, cinema is uniquely positioned to take us on these poetic journeys between realities. And it's something that Shirley deeply explores in her work. You're always at the end of Hangs a Man, the lead character kind of runs into the forest chasing her friend, and at some point in the forest you realize that the friend may or may not be real, and you've been following this friend for the entire book. Spoiler for Instagram, but I think it's one of the things that drew me to her work so much, and it really excited me that the thing that I'm maybe most excited about doing in cinema, Shirley Jackson does all the time in her work.
The name of the film is Shirley. It is streaming online now. We've been speaking with director Josephine Decker. Josephine, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.